表了人类创造性的天才杰作，能在一定时期内或世界某一文化区域保留下来，是一个历史的长期的或者是一个历史的长期的或者是一个历史的长期的或者是一个历史的长期的或者是一个历史的长期的或者是一个历史的长期的或者是一个历史的长期的或者是一个历史的长期的或者是一个历史的长期的或者是一个历史的长期的或者是一个offrir un exemple éminent d'un type de construction ou d'ensemble architectural ou technologique ou de paysage illustrant une ou des périodes. Представлять собой выдающийся образец традиционного человеческого поселения, землепользования или использования моря, характерного для той или иной культуры или культур. Взаимодействия o interacción humana con el medio ambiente, especialmente cuando se ha vuelto vulnerable bajo el impacto de un cambio irreversible.Estar asociado directa o tangiblemente con acontecimientos o tradiciones vivas, con ideas o con creencias, con obras artísticas y literarias de destacada importancia universal.
The ancient ceremony begins as scheduled, the Venetians dressing in their ancestors' costumes as they celebrate their traditional festival. It could be as if time and space have stood still. On the other side of the world, a Chinese festival is underway. However, beneath the colorful facial makeup, the people of Donghuang are not as they were in ancient times.Although their city has a history of more than 2,000 years, their presence goes back less than 300 years. The ancient city of Donghuang was established in 111 BC. The ancient houses, halls, and temples have long been consumed by the undulating desert sands and swallowed by the earth. Where are those who once lived in the city? Beginning 3.5 kilometers west of Donghuang and scattered over an area of the Gobi Desert of about 100 square kilometers are tens of thousands of ancient tombs dating from the Han to the Yuan dynasties.Nearest to the city are Han tombs. They are distinguished by their distinctive architecture. These were the earliest residents of the city who migrated from the central plains 2,000 years ago.
汉武帝拿下河西走廊以后，特别是建立河西郡以后，向东方地区大迁移，在汉成帝时间也一次大的迁徙。那么它主体部分呢，主要是汉族。这个移民呢有这么几种，一种是士兵，屯田戍边的士兵，还有更大的量是哪些人呢？是罪犯。敦煌文书也记载了敦煌的姓张的、姓索的，都是这么样子迁徙到敦煌。
Donghuang Prominent Clans Records, a document from the Tang Dynasty, records the aristocratic families in Donghuang.Their places of origin and why they moved to Donghuang. Only three surnames, Zhang, Yin, and Sua, are registered. According to records, people surnamed Sua were relocated to Donghuang from Nanhe and Xulu in 111 BC after they'd defied an imperial edict. According to another document,Those surnamed Yan came from Taiyuan Prefecture and were ordered to Donghuang as border guards. Others, such as those surnamed Yin, settled here after completing 10 years of military service in the region. These family names, familiar to the central plains, gradually took root in this remote land.The towering desert tombs marked the longest sojourners in their new homeland. However, in the 4th century AD, the wider region was overrun. Warfare saw great numbers of the gentry and the common people from the central plains take refuge further south, while others came to the border city of Dunhuang. In the 5th century AD, the wars reached Dunhuang. Different groups swept through the area, and some stayed on in Dunhuang. At the eastern end of Minsa Mountains, dug into a 1,680-meter long cliff, are 735 caves built between the 4th and 14th century. Those who paid for the digging of the caves were wealthy donors, some even having their portraits and names inscribed in the caves. There are about 9,000 portraits of these donors and over 7,000 inscriptions. The donors included aristocrats, commoners, border guards, and monks. We can meet the ancient people of Dunhuang by looking at these portraits and inscriptions. Cave 285 is the earliest existing Muogao cave, which can be dated exactly. On the upper side of the north wall of the cave, there is the famous Seven Buddhas portrait, with prayers and donors portraits under each Buddha. Based on the illustration of the first Buddha on the east side, it was commissioned on the 21st of the 5th month of the lunar calendar, 539 AD, during the northern Wei dynasty, to the Buddha of Amitaiduana by a devout disciple called Huahenu, who is holding a lotus flower. Judging from his surname and the tight-necked robe, Huahenu was probably from the Hepthalite ethnic group. Among the donors in the western section of the paintings, we have the inscription of Yin Angwei. People called Yin are descendants from those from the central plains who started to migrate to Dunhuang in the Han Dynasty. Unlike their ancestors who adhered to the original culture, Yin Angwei and the other donors of the same surname behind him were dressed in the same type of robes. Based on the chronological records, it's believed that the cave was constructed between 538 and 539 AD, when northern China had been unified for nearly 100 years under the Xianbei regime. The name of the Dunhuang people had already become established for those living in the area.
Dunhuang 它是带着各种肤色的，带着各种结构的，就是高鼻山木的也存在，就像兵马俑出来那些人也存在，还有蒙古高原上这些匈奴人的后裔和突厥人的后裔，在敦煌也有。那么青藏高原上像这是羌人的后裔，他也在敦煌。所以敦煌这块是多民族、多种人类的，在这块就是混杂。 交汇一个地。唐代时候啊，敦煌有一大批粟特人聚落迁徙到这儿，而且就在这个阶段呢，在敦煌地区出现了一个乡。
According to the recovered records, about one-third of the Dunhuang population in the 10th century were non-Han, of which the Sogdians were the majority. They were the major trading group in the city and even found their way to the political arena. Muogao Cave 156 is a merit cave in honor of Zhang Yizhao, the first governor of a local militia. The map drawn on the south wall of the cave commemorates the meritorious service of Zhang Yizhao's troops in rebelling Tubu tribesmen and recovering the Hexi region in 861 AD. Following their victory, the territory claimed by Zhang Yizhao's force was recognized as a border prefecture by the Tang Dynasty. It became the Dunhuang Guiyi Military Commandery, The multi-ethnic regime lasted more than 200 years.
张议潮的母亲就姓安，就是姓安的，就是西域胡人。他的副手就是安景民。安景民这个人呢，就是一个典型的一个粟特人。
A procession of Han and non-Han people, the guard of honor led by a fife band playing horns and drums from the western regions. The band is followed by a heavily armored cavalry, the elite of the Guiyi army. They are followed by two groups of civil officials and attendants in accordance with the Tang Dynasty regulations. In between the officials and the cavalry are dance groups dressed in Tubua costumes and musicians playing both Han and non-Han instruments. They are followed by a large procession with six military banners, official insignia, minor officials and eight silver knife officers. These appear with high bridged noses and deep eyes and wearing flower patterned felt hats and robes with side slits. The person riding the white horse on the bridge is the most important figure in the painting, Zhang Yizhao, governor of the region and warlord of the Guiyi army. He is followed by his guards and escorts. Behind the main force are the non-Han ethnic horseback archers wearing white felt hats, key supporters of Zhang Yizhao's regime. Needed all the support it could get to survive in the complex geopolitics of the time. As the Tang Dynasty finally collapsed in the early 10th century AD, the Guiyi army set up its own local kingdom. Their blood ties became both deeper and more extensive. Morgao Cave 61 is a merit cave in honor of the Cao family in Donghuang. There are 52 portraits of female donors on the north and south walls, with 51 inscriptions. Among these portraits are Zhao Yijing's Uyghur wife and Han wife, and his two daughters. One of the daughters married the Uyghur Khan of Ganzhou, the other married the Khan of Khotan. Some of them are dressed in Uyghur robes with curved lapels and peach-shaped phoenix crowns, with central plain-style flower buds on their foreheads and makeup on their cheeks. Others wear Han-style aristocratic dresses with Uyghur phoenix crowns and Tang-style flower hairpins. Different ethnic groups and cultures are linked by blood and affection, making Donghuang something of a multi-ethnic melting pot. The 13th century saw Mongol conquest and with it the rise of northern grassland roads and maritime trade routes. Donghuang lost its purpose as a commercial trade center and a point of departure across the desert. The population migrated elsewhere, leaving just a few oases in the desert wilderness. In 1524, the Ming Dynasty closed the Jiayu Pass and officially abandoned the west of the commandery. It was 200 years later that the Qing government re-established Sazhou Institute in Donghuang and relocated 2,400 immigrants from 56 countries in northwest China. These immigrants had no connection to the residents of the past, though they would share some of the same trials and tribulations. During the Tang and Song dynasties towards the end of a year, Dun Huang would hold a ceremony to ward off demons and plagues, and to exorcise ghosts. The event originated from the Central Plains, but the festival evolved as more groups moved into the area. Han government officials, commoners, Buddhists, disciples, Sogdians, and Zoroastrians, all dressed in colorful masks, are there, singing and parading through the streets and alleys of the bustling city. It represents the fulfillment of the imperial plan for their dynasty's frontier lands. In the 5th century AD, when mainland refugees moved to the Venetian Lagoon, it was just a deserted tidal flat. By the 14th century, Venice had become a major maritime trading power through its control of the spice trade in Europe.
They're an island people who have grown up with a completely unique set of circumstances. Venice is a place which has nothing. It has no crops. It has no land, it has very few natural resources. They're going to have to work together. They're also uniquely in history, I think in European history, a society that was completely based upon economics.
Venice was governed as a republic. The Doge's palaces in Piazza San Marco is a Gothic building. It was the center of Venice's political power. It was the residence of Venice's elected leader, the Doge, as well as the seat of its court and administrative bodies. In 726 AD, the third Doge of Venice was elected by the Citizens' Assembly. In more than 1,000 years, Venice had 120 Doges. The Venetian government was composed of three interlocking power groups. There was the Doge, who was elected for life, the Great Council, which elected him, and was composed of the noble families in the Republic. Finally, there was the Senate, the main law-making body, whose 60 members were elected from the Great Council.
Voi siete innanzitutto dentro alla sala del Maggior Consiglio del Palazzo Ducale di Venezia. Questa era la sala dove si riuniva la magistratura più importante dello Stato di Venezia. Fu costruita nel 1341 per ospitare appunto il Maggior Consiglio, che riuniva tutti i rappresentanti delle famiglie aristocratiche di Venezia che avessero compiuto i 25 anni di età. Quindi si riunivano qui ogni domenica al suono della campana del campanile di San Marco e qui si riunivano per prendere decisioni che potevano essere le elezioni delle cariche principali dello Stato, così come legiferare, così come eleggere il Doge.
In 1297, a constitutional process known as Great Council Lockout was launched in Venice. Following the lockout, the membership of the Great Council was established on hereditary right, exclusive to about 200 patrician families. These families were included in the Book of Gold, a list of the Venetian aristocracy. This anchored Venice's political fortunes in the hands of this aristocratic oligarchy. Venetian painting, Madonna of the Treasurers of the 16th century. The three people dressed in gorgeous velvet uniforms are the city's treasurers. Behind them are civic clerks dressed in black. Most of the citizens were local Venetians, and like the nobles, they would trade freely and enjoy low taxation. Some were traders, but most were employed by the Venetian administration. Compared with the aristocratic officials who rotate frequently, these long-serving civil servants ensured the continuity and stability of the administration. Mm-hmm. Venice was open to immigrants. Painter Bernardino Licinio was born in Bergamo, Lombardy, and he settled in Venice with his brother Arrigo's family. He painted this portrait for his brother's family with Agnes, his sister-in-law, located in the center and surrounded by her children. On the left was his brother Arrigo, and on the right was his nephew Fabio, who later became a goldsmith and sculptor.
Venezia è un coacervo di lingue, di etnie, di culture, di popolazioni, sin dal Medioevo, perché è uno dei porti più importanti dell'Europa e perché anche sul piano religioso appare più tollerante rispetto ad altri centri europei. E quindi è una città, è un magnete che attrae popolazioni da tutto il resto del Mediterraneo orientale e della Valpadana.
This work by the immigrant painter Gentile Bellini depicts a procession exhibiting sacred objects held in the Piazza San Marco on the 25th of April 1444. At the top right of the painting are the Doge and his entourage. The San Giovanni Brotherhood is at the forefront of the composition, with their white hooded robes. The organization, founded in 1261, was one of its oldest societies and a robust public force in Venice. In 1501, there were up to 210 societies in Venice, with extensive engagement from wealthy Aboriginal citizens and ordinary people. To limit the power of the privileged class, the society stipulated that hereditary nobles and clergy could only be honorary members without full membership. In the middle of the group is a businessman from Brescia, kneeling in front of the sacred objects, praying for the salvation of his dying son. There are more foreign faces. In the middle of the square, Greek merchants wear black-rimmed hats, and there are bee-turbaned Turks. The parade gives a portrait of Venice and its people at the end of the 15th century. If Venice was an enterprise, the Lion of St. Mark was its totem and logo. Time and tide may fade away, but the earth still records their traces.
You have to go into each cave, and then each cave is a complete revelation. It shows us the development of religious painting, of Buddhist painting in China from sort of 300 up to 1,000 or so. You have this incredibly long period, about 1,000 years, of religious art, perfectly preserved. You know, the atmosphere is dry, is safe, and the paintings are simply miraculous.
The mural Prince Sattva Jataka sits in the middle section of the south wall of Morkau Cave 254. It tells the story of Sakyamuni's previous incarnation as Prince Sattva, who, on a hunting trip, had seen a female tiger and seven young cubs dying of hunger. Out of compassion, he jumped off the cliff to let them feed on his flesh to save themselves. The painting adopts rough and strong colors and leaves little space untouched. The distorted and geometric form pushes against the frame with a strong concave and convex, as if it's about to break through the wall. Something never been seen in Central Plains artworks. the tragic theme echoes reality. In 421 AD, Xiuqiu Mengxun, ruler of the northern Liang dynasty, led 20,000 soldiers to capture Dunhuang and ordered the massacre of its population. In the following decades, Dunhuang saw much of welfare, pestilence, and famine. Mogao Cave 254 was built during this period. The strokes on the wall record the suffering of a city deserving of sympathy. Life can be heroic or leisurely. When you walk into Cave 285, the fresh colors unfold before you. In the 6th century AD, the Xianbei regime reunited northern China. As their rulers were admiring of the Han culture, culture from the central plains were again reflected in the cave murals. The story of converting the 500 bandits on the south wall of the cave takes the form of a long scroll. This composition has been popular in the central plains since the Han dynasty. Amidst the green mountains, lucid waters, and soft spring breeze, a Buddha is preaching to a group of bandits with flying flowers, flowering clouds, and dancing animals. By the weeping willows in the bamboo forest, the former bandits, dressed in monastic robes, are being ordained as monks to begin new lives. Buddhist stories are combined with the fantastical landscape, a common element in the Central Plains culture. The rugged character of the frontier is infused with a more elevated lifestyle and closeness to nature. The Sui and Tang dynasties saw Dunhuang at its peak as trading city that was queen of the Silk Road. This was also the busiest time for grotto carving at Mogao. As Buddhism became more and more influential in China, sutra paintings were a popular theme for the murals. They were there to witness the piety of their sponsors and as a guide for eternity. In the Amitai Erduana Sutra on the south wall of Mogao Cave 172, the painter depicts the pure lands of bliss in Buddhist scriptures with all the riches of the material world. The lotus flowers are in full bloom. A small bridge is to the fore, tempting the viewer to take just one small step to enter a world of heavenly bliss. Dancers perform on a fine oriental carpet accompanied by a variety of musicians. A desk is dressed with exquisite brocade on which sits a yoyi, a ceremonial scepter in Chinese Buddhism, but also a symbol of power and good fortune in popular folklore. Orbs are arranged to dispel evil and plague. On the dais on each side are seated bodhisattvas with plump figures, fine eyebrows, and slanted eyes. The goddess of mercy and the bodhisattva of great power wear jade necklaces and waist decorations with dignified solemnity. The Amitabha Buddha sits on a throne, and behind them all huge halls tower into the cloud-like mountains with rows upon rows of corridors. Artists of Dunhuang painted the ideal grandeur in the secular world as an allusion to a world beyond, but never left their name on their works. As Tang Suhong, the first director of Dunhuang Research Institute, wrote, "They were never obsessed over natural landscapes or personal ambition, but worked on what they saw around them and the ideal of a Buddhist paradise." Their simple and vigorous painting style differs greatly from that of later Chinese literary paintings. Mogao
is home to 45,000 square meters of murals and more than 2,400 painted carvings. They bear witness to aesthetic, spiritual, and religious beliefs of many different peoples over the hundreds of years that Don Juan enjoyed as a flourishing melting pot of culture and commerce. In the 13th century, as Don Juan went into decline, Venice was beginning its rise to preeminence. Venetians like gold. Brilliant gold represents reason, wealth, glory, and tenacity. Such aesthetics are longing for wealth can be traced back to Byzantium. In the early 15th century, Venice's total fiscal revenue reached 1.5 million ducats, making it one of the richest countries in Europe. Their wealth required greater outlets for expression, which it found in art and architecture. Giovanni Bellini is the artist who lit up the morning light of Venetian paintings. In his Christ Blessing, three techniques are employed simultaneously. With the Byzantine gold painting technique, the golden light circling Jesus' head symbolizes Christ's divinity. In a tempera painting, egg yolk and egg white are mixed with the pigment. This dries out quickly, requiring painters to be quick at their work. A new practice of oil painting, blending pigments with specific vegetable oils, was coming into its own. These paintings dry more slowly, giving the painter time to work on richer colors and textures. The wounds on Jesus' palm and chest are slightly visible, and the delicate shadow cast by his raised arm seems to affirm the authenticity of his resurrection. In the distance behind him, a serene and romantic light appears on the horizon, the same light that appears in the 16th century Venetian painting. The painter Giorgione studied under Giovanni Bellini. He was not only a gifted painter, but also a musician and poet. In this painting, figures are placed among rugged rocks with mysterious creatures hidden in the water. In contrast to the bleak background, the center is a mesmerizing mix of light and color marking the horizon. Atmospheric perspective gives the distant mountain landscape a touch of cold blue. The magical moment life is turned into a poetic tranquility on the canvas. In 1510, Giorgione died of the Black Death at the age of 31. The disease was ravaging Europe, claiming countless lives. The living either prayed for protection or lived for the day, none knowing whether there would be a tomorrow. Tiziano was an outsider from the Alps who came to Venice to study painting. He would become the sun among its stars in the Venetian art world with his realistic and passionate style. The Bacchanal of the Adrians features a Dionysia, the celebration of the god Bacchus in Greek and Roman culture. Bacchus does not appear directly, but is replaced by a group of Andros islanders drinking together. The best quality pigments are presented in the purest way, and the scenery and people in the foreground are highlighted in warm colors. The distant mountains and sky at the back are cool colors, giving an air of remoteness. the spatial distance is realized by this contrast of warm and cold colors. Unlike typical Renaissance compositions, Tiziano puts many diagonal forms into the painting. Crowds on the left seem to lie on the grass from top to bottom, while women stretch lazily from bottom to top in the lower right corner. A woman in a blue dress stepping forward is balanced by a man in red walking into the distance. Such deliberate use of contrast and balance emphasizes scenes of merrymaking and drinking. Of the time described his dinner with Tiziano in a letter. It's dusk. The table was well prepared, facing the lagoon with its gorgeous skyline in the distance. As soon as the sun goes down, the waters will be covered by more than 1,000 gondolas. The sea made elegant with beautiful women and vibrant with harmonious musical instruments. Venetians' free and passionate lives continue to bloom under the brushes of Venetian painters. Paolo Veronese's The Wedding at Cana is a painting on a huge scale. It depicts the biblical story of Jesus miraculously turning water into wine while attending a wedding party. Veronese turns the scene into an extravagant Venetian wedding. The wedding band itself is composed of other Venetian painters. Tiziano in red is playing cello. Tintoretto is in blue playing the violin. The painter dressed in a white coat and playing the viola is Veronese himself. The barefoot servant pours red wine from a silver-colored urn into a golden carafe. At the back stands the poet, Pietro Arantino, gazing at the wine in his glass. On the left side of the painting, the bride and groom sit at the outermost end of the table. The man in blue, man to the left of the bride, is the Ottoman envoy, Sakulu Mohammed Pasa. At the end of the table, in a pointed red and yellow hat, is Suleiman the Magnificent, the 10th Sultan of the Ottoman Empire. In later years, the Venetians and Ottomans would become deadly rivals for control of the Mediterranean. However, at the beginning of the 16th century, Ottoman fleets were successfully contesting the Indian Ocean passages, with the Portuguese allowing Venice to maintain its position of dominance in the spice trade. Thus, its intricacies of Venice's painstakingly maintained international relationships are reflected in this grand tableau. The great moments of its history are captured on the walls and ceilings of the city by its painters. If Venice were a ship, then the great council hall of the Doge's palace would mark the laying down of its keel. This painting, Paradise, occupies the most important wall of the Great Council Hall, completed by Tintoretto and his son. The painting is 7 meters high and 22 meters wide, making a total of 154 square meters. It is the largest oil-on-canvas painting in the world. The culmination of Venetian secular power is depicted with concrete religious elements. Jesus and the Virgin are surrounded by angels and the saints arrayed in hierarchical order. If Venice is an enterprise, then Paradise represents the zenith of its entrepreneurial aspirations. The eternal solidity of gold breaks down into light and transforms into rapidly changing colors. As Venice's maritime journey slowly ends in the afterglow, the light and color of Venetian painting illuminated the future of European art. The idea of Venice gives rise to two stereotypes: the calculating commercialism that desires nothing but wealth, and the satisfaction of earthly desires in indulgence and masked decadence. The Rialto Casino, located in the Dandolo Palace beside Venice's Grand Canal, was the first government-approved public casino in the world. Known as the Ridotto, or private room, it opened during the Carnival of 1638. The walls are covered in gold brocade, whilst prostitutes and courtesans wearing dumb masks flirt with their clients from behind ornate fans. The masked men are better disguised, businessmen who have just made a fortune or nobles who have fallen in their ways. This type of mask set, referred to as bauta, consists of a mask called volto, a black hood decorated with lace, and a triangular hat. Its origins can be traced back to the 13th century when Venetian citizens had to wear bauta to vote in order to ensure the even-handedness in major political decisions. It was Venice's version of the secret ballot. This seemingly strange mask symbolizes so much of what Venice was to become. In the 17th century, the Mediterranean trade routes, which Venice dominated, began to be overtaken by the Atlantic Ocean route. The once great trading power and art capital was marginalized and gradually reduced to a gorgeous but somewhat melancholy tourist destination. Streets of Venice, who are the real Venetians? They are those who still speak the Venetian dialect and those who can quickly find their way around the tour groups in the maze-like narrow lanes without a map. Today's Venetians are no longer the captains of the sea who fought for control of the Mediterranean or the merchants by the Rialto Bridge, but Venice is still their home. Burano Island is 40 minutes by boat from the main island. It is one of the earliest settlements on the lagoon and is renowned for its lace making. The Museo del Mileto on the island belongs to the Marcello family, one of Venice's old aristocratic families.
Il Merletto ci viene tramandato dai Bizantini. Venezia aveva grandi scambi con Bisanzio e quindi è venuta l'arte del merletto. Il merletto veniva fatto dovunque a Venezia. Era un'abitudine nelle case, sia popolari che patrizie, di fare le fanciulle imparassero a usare l'ago. Qui a Burano ha avuto appunto un particolare sviluppo, vista la capacità, loro abilità delle donne di Burano di usare l'ago, perché avevano i mariti pescatori e dovevano fare le reti. Da quello hanno da fare la rete in grande, la rete sempre più piccola per arredare le loro case, la cosa che si è perduta, si sta perdendo quantomeno. Bisnonna, nonna, papà, mio fratello, io sono il quinto della famiglia che se ne occupa. E stiamo facendo tutto il possibile con la fondazione perché non vada perduta.
Zanzanqin's family moved to Dunhuang from Shaanxi after 1965. His late father taught him the Qizi opera. Now he's passing it on to his granddaughter. As has happened many times in history, the culture of new immigrants is absorbed into Dunhuang's memory. In addition to migrants who came from afar to make a living here, after 1944, a new group of people settled in Dunhuang to guard it as their second hometown.
When these ancestors came to this place, it was a desolate land. 特别是在有一张照片中，我看到他们在深夜里面，在那个地方加班工作的时候，他们围坐在一盏油灯前。当时那盏灯特别触动我，我觉得那就是那盏心灯。恰恰是有这样一个群体，几代人生生不息地在这个地方，默默地、不求闻达地在这个地方工作。我觉得正是这种精神的传承，还会有更多年轻的人到达这里。 来把这个生命的历史接续起来，让它变得更长。我自己的感觉真的是就是在那个毛笔尖上啊，一笔一画，然后一分一秒的这种积累中，达成的这样一种认知，我是敦煌人。
Primo grazie, grazie perché sono riuscito a vivere in un posto magico.
Venezia è un sogno romantico per tutti.
È la città dove io sono vissuto, dove ho passato la mia giovinezza.
Thank you. My farewell word would be thank you, I think, too.
感谢就是说，蒙古能够让我真真实实看到了古代的中国人。
Let us hope that Dunhuang will stay.
实际上，它的代表性呢，它的文化属性呢，不仅仅是属于中国，也属于世界。Because
they testify to ancient civilizations, the memory of the civilization.
就时间可以摧毁一切的，其实真正永恒的，就是一种精神。